body that she must call her own. They treat her like a flower pot for a seed he has sown. The woman makes a baby, feeds him till he's grown. Those who feed on flesh and blood break his spirit down, fill his brains with poison, teach him left and right. How to hate his brother, they teach him black and white. The woman makes a baby, there's a big strong son. Those who feed on soldier boys, take him for the gun. The woman has a body that she must call her own. They treat her like a flower pot for a seed that he has sown. Your spirit is free, free to question. A woman's body is her own, consider abortion. They subjugate his senses, mystify his mind. He forgets where he came from, he's deaf and dumb and blind. They'll cage him in a factory, tied on his desire. Milk his body of his strength to stoke another fire. Turn him loose in the bull ring to fight with tooth and claw. Kick his balls of punishment if he questions what it's for. Tell him he's got freedom as he struggles on the leash. Fill his mouth with violence, tell him it's free speech. Woman has a body that she must call her own. They treat her like a flower pot for seed that he has sown. Your spirit is free to take or refuse. A woman's body is her own, a woman's right to choose. Power as he claws his way above, over those who fall behind, over those who need his love, over those who feed his body, those who ease his pain, those who bear his children and those who lose the game. He who was a baby but now is big and grown will crush his lover's body, tie her spirit down, cage her in a kitchen so he knows she'll be there when he comes home bruised and bleeding for her tender care. Woman has a body that she must call her own. They treat her like a flower pot for seed that he has sown. Her spirit is free, choice is action. A woman's body is her own, abortion is an option. Be a daughter strong and straight. Those who feed on flesh and blood can hardly better wait. They teach her she's a vessel for him to enter in. And those whose appetite she feeds tell her she's sin. If cripple her with corsets, things would make her weak. Crucify her instead, smear paint on her cheek. Turn her loose in the market to buy and be sold. She's an empty vessel for promises of gold. The woman has a body that she must call her own. They treat her like a flower pot for seed that he has sown. Her spirit is free, choice is her action. A woman's body is her own. Abortion must be an option. They buy her for a nursery where a baby will grow. Treat her like a flower pot for a seed he has sown. Cage her in a doll's house, tie down her desire. Cheat her spirit of its strength, stoke another fire. If she talks of freedom, how it all began, those who know will tell her that she should have been a man. They deny her body, they deny her mind. She forgets where she came from, she's deaf and dumb and blind. A woman has a body that she must call her own, but they treat her like a flower pot for a seed that he has sown. Your spirit is free, consider abortion. A woman's body is her own, abortion is an option. Protection, shelter from the cold, lust of a factory, promise of gold. She that makes a baby is a woman full grown. No priest take her mind, no man take control. Don't feed the factory, don't feed the gun. Don't feed the church, your baby's your own. Human spirit is free, choice is woman's fight. A woman's body is her own, abortion is her right. The woman has a body that she must call her own. The treat her like a flower pot for seed that he has sown. Her spirit is free, freedom's her fight. A woman's body is her own, abortion is her right.
Thanks for returning to Great Speeches and Interviews on Axis Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman. If you're just joining us, we're listening to Carbon Shock with Mark Shapiro. He reviews the financial front lines of climate change. You can hear this program at 96.5 FM in the Sacramento area, or you can go to axissacramento.org, or you can download this program from greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
Our own state of California pushing the boundaries of what is a way to legitimately regulate greenhouse gases. Very interesting legal case, again, which expands the notion within American law, and that has to do with the renewable energy portfolio of the state of California, which some of you might be familiar with, which requires a steady reduction of fossil fuel-intensive energy over the coming decades. Started by Schwarzenegger, picked up and strengthened by Jerry Brown, and it's now in effect. And it affects the ways and the forms of energy that is obtained by California Energy. And the low carbon fuel standard is very similar when it comes to liquid fuels for transport. What's interesting about that case is the state of California was sued by a bunch of Midwestern ethanol producers because they felt that the state's relatively stringent laws regulating the amount of carbon dioxide that's emitted from biofuels, much more emitted by Midwestern fuels based on corn than the California-based kind of algae and weed and other kind of vegetable oils have a much lower carbon footprint in California than they do in the Midwestern corn. So state of California is sued by the Midwestern, essentially the Midwestern corn ethanol producers on the grounds of violation of interstate commerce. As you know, very important principle, uniting the United States as a single economy. And the first stage, they won. The California law was put on hold. And then it was appealed to the Ninth Circuit, based right here in San Francisco. And the Ninth Circuit found in favor of the state of California. Why? This is also very interesting and another thing to remember. The state of California was using a life cycle analysis. When I first heard that term, I thought it was some kind of Buddhist kind of ceremony that I had to kind of figure out and chant to get, you know, in that state. Then I realized it's actually a fundamental idea of, you know, of environmental thinking. And the life cycle being the production, distribution, and disposal of goods over the course of their life cycle. To establish the California renewable energy portfolio, they've done a very substantive life cycle analysis of the kinds of energy that goes into the state of California. Why is that important? Because for the first time in American law, the Federal Court of Appeals, one step below the Supreme Court, declared that the use of life cycle analysis by the state of California to establish the rules governing the types of energy that the state of California could use was legitimate. It was the first time life cycle analysis had ever made its way into a legal decision, I promise you that. And why that's important is because this expands the purview of American law, right? So when you think about climate change, and I'm trying to articulate this idea that basically the action is all around us, and it's happening both on mega levels when it comes to geopolitical negotiations, and it's also happening on very specific levels when it comes to how the government exercises power. And I'll just give you two very quick more examples of ways to of how climate change is beginning to expand our existing principles of more, a couple of other ideas, liability. How do you hold companies liable for a problem that is basically the problem comes from here, but the problem is everywhere? How do you establish liability for that? This is one of the fundamental challenges that we now face. Thankfully, this great journal called Climatic Change, which is a peer-reviewed journal, came out with a story about a study by scientists, peer-reviewed by other scientists, identifying that 2/3 of the greenhouse gas emissions in the world are created by 90 companies. So we actually know who's responsible. But this notion of how to hold them liable for these damages is fundamental to the debates that are ongoing right now. And the notion of who is responsible for these damages, huge development when it comes to China's recent agreement with the United States. There is no question it could have been stronger, but the notion that a developing country like China, rapidly developing, would commit itself to some level of emission reductions challenges the division of the world between developed country and developing country, right? There's a huge shift going on in the sort of global architecture of power. And one of those is the increasing responsibility that some developing countries are taking, and particularly China in this case, to deal with their emissions. There's a lot more that I could actually talk about in terms of how climate change is altering our notions of power, and how not to mention our economic order. But the reason I wrote this book, Carbon Shock, is because I wanted to demonstrate how these huge fundamental shifts that are happening in our natural order have their corollary on our economic system. And that's, I think, a very important part of this discussion that I think is kind of key to comprehend and actually enable us to basically make more educated decisions moving forward. So I try to do that with kind of stories in different parts of the world where a lot of these actions are taking place. People in the middle of these big changes around the world. So with that, I will close. Thank you.
Well, thanks to Mark for his comments here today. We'd like to remind our listening audience that this is a program with the Commonwealth Club of California. And you're listening to Carbon Shock, a tale of risk and calculus on the front lines of the disrupted global economy with Mark Shapiro. Now, we open the floor to a Q&A. Please keep your questions short and to the point. Also, please be sure that your questions are, in fact, questions and not statements. We have standing up microphones up here, down here, actually. If you have any questions, please line up behind one of these microphones and speak into the microphone as we are recording.
Thank you so much for your presentation. Wonderful narrative of the changes that are occurring in our economy and our environment.
Thank you.
I was wondering if you might speak about carbon markets and your firsthand experience of them. They seem really arcane, but I know they're changing the world because the price of carbon is one of the key influencers in adopting new technology and changing things. So I'd like you to talk a little bit about that.
Okay. Well, all right. That's a good question. I figured we would want to deal with carbon markets at some point. I've written so much about them that I thought. So this is fundamental. So this challenge that the world faces to establish this price for carbon, very rapidly, go back to Kyoto Protocol, big debate, would it be a carbon tax or would there be a cap and trade system? The European Union, in alliance with the G77 developing countries, favored a carbon tax, which broadly perceived as a direct price for fossil fuels. And the United States insisted that it be done through a market mechanism and essentially threatened to withdraw from the talks if that wasn't the case. So the whole world basically changed, or the rest of the world changed its tune and endorsed the notion of cap and trade back in 1997. As a way to leverage the price of carbon higher. And without going into all the details of a very, very complex cap and trade system, this cap and trade system was established to provide emission limits in countries that signed the Kyoto Protocol. Companies that met those limits, companies that were over those limits had to purchase emission allowances. Companies that were lower than those limits could sell those emission allowances. It seemed like a beautiful kind of balancing act. And that way you would generate a price for carbon through the top emitters of the world. 4 years later, change in government. You might remember George W. Bush was elected president. Within a month, he had withdrawn So 1 month after George Bush gets into office, he withdraws the United States from the Kyoto process. Condoleezza Rice, his national security advisor, says Kyoto is dead. Well, guess what? Kyoto never died. And all the other countries that had signed Kyoto, and particularly the European Union, Japan, New Zealand, went forward with this idea that had been designed by the Americans. So basically, they were left to execute a plan that had been designed by the Americans and that they had specifically allowed to happen because they wanted the Americans as part of the picture. And then the Americans left the picture, but they were left with this program.
cutting us down. Shut them in down long ago. What if your new heart found her dead on the ground? How can you run when you know for dead in Ohio?
Now back to Carbon Shock and Mark Shapiro.
So we have carbon markets, as you've indicated. Now we have this one in California, obviously, and a lot of the carbon trading. Carbon traders are right here in downtown San Francisco. The I go into this in detail in the book. The fundamental problem, fundamental challenge of the carbon markets has been that they've never really reached the point where a price for carbon was reached that would actually significantly change investment decisions. So most resource economists will tell you you need a price of $40 to $50 minimum a ton to actually change the investment decisions of major industries. In California, certainly it's been hovering around $10 to $14, $15 a ton. In Europe, it reached a peak of about $30 a ton, but then dropped over the last 2 years to about more like, you know, $2 to $8 a ton, is now kind of clambering back up to $10 to $13 a ton. So there's been enormous inefficiencies in the carbon markets. And two, there's an enormous amount of the money that is going into them is generated to arbitrage companies who actually trade on the market. So World Bank has done a study and showed that essentially 25% of the money on the European market anyway is secondary market, is through speculators, which means that 25 cents out of every dollar goes to Goldman Sachs and Bank of America and all the other guys who have carbon trading desks, who have had carbon trading desks there. So there is great potential for the cap and trade system if it's aggressively monitored and the price does continuously rise and it's done in a predictable fashion, which would enable companies to actually know what kind of price for energy they're facing. But there's been so much volatility that it's been hard to say that they've accomplished what they were hoping to accomplish at this stage. And I write about it in quite a bit of detail in here. So I hope that answers it without going into all the kind of trap doors of the system, which you may be familiar with somewhat.
We'll take the next question.
Thank you. In the course of your research, have you encountered information about the expenditures put forth by carbon emitters to subvert the regulatory process? I'm thinking of, AstroTurf organizations, various sorts of efforts like that. And how do you see them weighing on the political question of carbon emissions?
Do you mean the denier organizations?
Yeah, essentially denier organizations, but more specifically, how much effort financially has gone into that effort?
Well, it's interesting that you ask that question because, number one, the climate deniers are basically getting outpaced by some of the industries that, in a way, the U.S. Congress is now more climate denying than many of the leading industries in the United States. It's really amazing. They're like frozen in some time. They've been outpaced by ExxonMobil. They've been outpaced by Chevron, all of whom, and I described this in the book, and I have a whole chapter on the oil industry and of course, the story of this rock, of the rock from the Prestige, but it's the whole oil industry. And what's interesting in relation to your question is the major fossil fuel companies now explicitly acknowledge climate change. So ExxonMobil, I actually I have some of this in the book, and then I wrote a kind of a follow-up piece for Yale 360, this environmental magazine out of Yale. And it was about the carbon price established by ExxonMobil. Guess what? ExxonMobil has a carbon price. They integrate that price into their accounting system. The price, they create that price based on a whole number of different factors, including the threat of regulation, including the threat that climate change presents to their infrastructure. And guess what? They actually look and register the public pressure that's being put on governments to act on carbon. So who was following the climate demonstrations in New York about a month ago in New York? You might have been following it. I was trying to keep track from here just to see what was going on. And ExxonMobil was following it very closely because they write their climate, their carbon price within their company based partly on the public pressure to act on climate change. So that's a long way to answer number one. The major American companies, if you look at General Mills, the big food processing company, hugely concerned about climate change explicitly because they're concerned about the supply chain of all those cereals and grains going to their processing facilities. Numerous examples like that. And so actually what you have now is this disjunction between the largest companies in America and the U.S. political order, which is still, you know, fixed in this kind of, you know, there's no other way to describe it, just this blind, willful, blind position, largely at the behest of the Koch brothers and others who themselves are being outpaced by other fossil fuel intensive industries. So hopefully that answers somewhat of your question. Yes.
Thank you.
This is a song about a worldwide tradition, and I imagine there might be some sympathizer to this tradition here in this audience. There might be some that aren't really, you know, into it, but, you know, it's really not a song for those who aren't into it. It's a song for those who are. Because history will ultimately, the people that aren't into it, history will leave you in the dust. This is a song for all the people in India and Palestine and Seoul, Korea, and other places around the world that know how to properly display and otherwise deal with the American flag. And it was nice to see, you know, during Clinton's well-publicized visit to India, that there's still plenty of people all over the country that know what to do when they see the American president nearby. They tried to pass an amendment in the U.S. Congress. Seems these thugs have some grievance to redress. They said we all must pledge allegiance, cause that is what they need. They will not desecrate their symbol of hypocrisy and greed. But the flag is just a rag. Yeah, sing along. The flag is just a rag. You know it. Just a worn out, tired, dirty, blood-soaked rag. That's the hard part, but you'll get it next time. Like they say in Mexico, Yankee, go home. Uncle Sam and his club thinks the world's there to roam. And to make the point, well, they do the traditional thing. Light a match and let freedom ring. Cause the flag is just a rag. Let me hear you. The flag is just a rag. Shout it out. Just a worn out, tired, dirty, blood-soaked rag. Pledge allegiance to the symbol, well, how about the deed? Allegiance to democracy or blind authority, it's a flag of war from L.A. to Vietnam. It desecrates itself each time the Air Force drops a bomb. Yeah, the flag is just a rag. Oh, the flag is just a rag. Just a worn out, tired, dirty, blood-soaked rag. Take it away, Eric. Stomp it, tear it up, or at least hang it upside down. Tie it to your foot and drag it on the ground. Let everybody know how many lives are gone cause of idiots who said my country right or wrong. Yeah, the flag is just a rag. Let me hear you. The flag is just a rag. Just a worn out, tired, dirty, blood-soaked rag. Let's hear it one more time for all the people adversely affected by the IMF and the internet and the World Bank. I think that makes about two-thirds or three-fourths of the world's population. So let's, you know, this has got to be loud because we're singing for 4 billion people here, okay? Yeah, the flag is just a rag. Oh, the flag is just a rag. Just a worn out, tired, dirty, blood-soaked rag.
And now, messages from Access Sacramento.